So we start with the Mishnah. Kola, Shofros, Ksherin, Chutz, Mishal, Paru. We're finally starting to talk about Rosh Hashanah itself. And Mishnah tells us all Shofaros are kosher to be used on Rosh Hashanah except for the Shofar of a Paru. Mipnei Shehu Karen. Because it's a Karen. It's not a Shofar. Amar of Yossi, V'halo kola Shofaros Nikru Karen. Aren't all Shofaros also called Karen? Karnayim, aren't they also called Karen? Shenema bimshoch b'Karen hayovel. And he quotes the pasuk from Yoshua when they're surrounding Yericho. And the pasuk there interchangeably uses the word Karen and Shofar. At one place it says Shofar, another place it says Karen. And the Karen of a Yovel, the Gemara is going to tell us, is a male sheep, which I think we call a ram. Even though I think a ram is the term used for a couple of animals, males, is a male sheep. I think a male goat might also be called a ram. I looked it up on Wikipedia. A ram is a term that's used interchangeably for a couple of different animals for as a male. They call it a ram. But the psukim there use the word shofar, use the word keren. And and there we find, though, that a keren of a ram, a ram's horn, is called a keren. So what's the Tanakhama talking about? That the problem is if something's called a Karen. If something's called a Karen, it's a problem. In Yoshua, they call it a Karen. We know it's a shofar. It's called a shofar there, and it's called a Karen. So what's the problem of something being called a Karen? Now, the Gemara immediately tries to fix things up and says Rav Yossi seemingly is making a great point. And it says, Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon going to do? So the Rabbanon are going to say, no, we're not bothered by something being called a Karen. We know the psukim in Tanakh. We know that sometimes something can be called a Karen. The problem is that everything else, let's say, not everything else, but at least by the ram, it's called a shofar and it's called a Karen. That's fine. But a cow's horn is only called a Karen. It's not called a shofar anywhere. So just one or two ha'aras before we begin. I think it's a diak. If you read the Mishnah, the Tanakhama seems to be talking about what is it? Is it a Karen or is it a shofar? Tanakhama says, "Kol shofar shakshayon chutz mishalpara mipnei shehu karen, because it is a karen." And Rav Yossi starts responding about what it's called. Tanakhama, I would think, was responding back, "Who's talking about what it's called? I'm talking about what it is. There's something called a shofar. There's something called a karen. This is not a shofar. This is a karen." That's what the Tanakhama said. It is a karen. Rav Yossi responds and says, "Yeah, but it's called." He says it is a Karen. And Rav Yossi starts talking about what things are called. Sure enough, once the Gemara starts, you see that it's very clear that the discussion is not about what it is, but it's all about what it's called. Meaning Rav Yossi understood the Tanakhama correctly. Tanakhama was talking about what it's called. So what's the difference? So the Ramban says that whenever you're dealing with horns, you have to first clarify. You know, before I bring the Ramban, let me just bring one other question on the Mishnah. The Ritva asks a question, which at first when I read it, I wasn't sure I liked the question so much, but it grew on me. And I think it is a great ha'ara. Mishnah says, Kol shofaros are ksherim. Meaning, right, all shofaros are kosher except for the following. Following what? The following shofar. All shofar, chutz means that you're taking something out from the group. In other words, if a cow's horn wasn't a shofar, it would just say kol shofaros ksherin, and we would know that a cow's horn is not called a shofar. It's called whatever you want to call it. Call it a karen. It's not called a shofar. It's not a shofar. So just tell me, kol shofaros are kosher, and I'll know that the horn of a cow is not kosher because it's not a shofar. By saying kol shofaros are ksherin chutz mishal parah means that mishal parah is also a shofar, but it's not kosher. So the Ramban says, based on this, that you have to look at two different criteria. There is something that makes a horn into a shofar, and that is the fact that it's chalul. There are certain types of horns that grow on the animal, and the inside is not able to be separated from the shell. And if you want to turn it into an instrument, you would need to drill out carve out the inside. Then there are other types of horns that there's a piece of flesh, and there's a separate entity. It's not really fresh. Whatever it is, there's some type of growth. And then there is a horn, there's an appendage that comes out, and then there is a horn that grows on top of it. But the horn can be separated from, it's just a covering that can be removed. So the Ramban says that if something is not naturally hollow, so it's not a shofar, and there's nothing to talk about. It's obviously not going to be kosher for Rosh Hashanah. Once you have a horn that's called a shofar, that is a shofar, which means that it's hollow, now we could start discussing the question of what it's called. So, based on this, we're able to explain a couple of things. First of all, Tosfos asks a question right here on the page. How come Hadlok Tani Nami Chutz Mishel Re'em? Why doesn't the Mishnah tell us that the horn of a Re'em is also called a Karen, and it's also not kosher? Horn of a Re'em is not kosher. As the Pasuk says, V'karnei Re'em Karnov. So, Tosfos leaves it as seemingly as a little bit of a question, and he says, Shema, it's not Cholol, and it's not Roy to be a shofar. It's fundamentally the Cheftza. It can't be a shofar. It's not a shofar. Meaning there's something that's Bimahus, in its essence, is called a shofar. That's a Cholol, and a Re'em is not a Cholol. So, that would first of all explain to us why Re'em's not... Now, first of all, what's a Re'em? What's a Re'em is a good question. We have two animals that are referred to as Re'em in Tanakh. One is a bull, and it's a male cow. And one is an antelope, or something like an antelope, with the very, very, you know, huge, beautiful horns. Now, one pasuk, for instance, we know we say, V'tareim kare'em karnov. When David HaMelech speaks about conquering his enemies, he says, I will be victorious, and I will raise up my horns like a re'em. Now, a bull is a very strong animal, but if you were trying to create like the imagery of someone raising up their horns in victory, you would, if you ever saw a picture of an antelope, so that's the imagery there. The antelope has these beautiful horns, and that's the term kare'em karnov, as the Ibn Ezra says in the Pasuk. He says an animal that has very big, huge horns.
Are you using horns of antlers more or less?
Yeah, the antlers, horns, whatever. Well, I'm referring to them as, yes, the antlers of the...
Antlers are very different. Antlers are branching structures.
Right, which is what the antelope has.
Blood flow in them.
Right, which the antelope has.
The key thing is horns, like the ibex in Israel.
Yeah, no, so I'm not talking about an ibex. I'm talking about an antelope with the beautiful...
African antelope?
Okay, I'm not sure about the different...
antlers. Antlers are only...
Yeah, so antlers. I'm talking about antlers.
That's for reading. That's a blood-filled organ.
Yes. Okay, so that's what we're referring to. When the Navi describes, Ibn Ezra describes the animal who has the beautiful branching, I would have called them horns, but we'll call them antlers. And if you're telling me that they're fundamentally different than horns, so that's fine. But the Pasuk, when it's describing, the Ibn Ezra says, when the Pasuk is describing that victorious raising up of the hand, of the horns, it's referring to like an antelope or a reindeer, which is a very beautiful, majestic image, but they're not very strong. The antelopes of the and that's why the Ibn Ezra says we have another pasuk, which is what's another pasuk that describes a re'em? It's another pasuk. V'karnei re'em karnov bahem yinagach. The imagery that the Ibn Ezra says on that pasuk is that is referring to a bull in that pasuk. And that's talking about goring horns, like on a bull. So we have a question here of what Tosis asks, why is the re'em not discussed in the Mishnah? So first of all, if a re'em is a bull, so it might be discussed in the Mishnah because it would be excluded by the para. Just like the para's horns, and we're going to see in a second, it's not only the female para, it's also the male para, it's also the bull. If re'em in the pasuk of the karnei re'em karnov is referring to a bull, so it is in the pasuk. Tosfos apparently thinks it's talking about some type of antelope or some type of reindeer, and it's referring to antlers. Antlers they're called?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Antlers. And therefore, he wants to know why those are not included, and the answer is because they're not horns. That's exactly the answer of Tosfos. They're not horns. That's why the Mishnah doesn't need to exclude an antelope's antlers. I'm getting mixed up here.
An
antelope's antlers don't need to be excluded from the Mishnah because those aren't horns, as you pointed out. I mean, I didn't realize Ad Heichan how much he was correct in the fact that it's a organ as opposed to
I don't think that David HaMelech ever saw a reindeer in his life. And also, furthermore, nobody ever they're for northern climate. And also, you can't blow into an antler.
So I think that's the answer. That's Tosfos' point. Meaning, how come the Mishnah didn't say except for a Re'em? And his answer is because it's not Cholol and it's not Roy to be a shofar. Meaning, You can't blow into it. Now, you could maybe drill out the inside and make it into a horned instrument, but that's not a shofar, and that's exactly the point. The point is that a cow's horn is a horn, and therefore, all shofars, meaning hollow, blowable horns, are kosher, except for the cows. Now, Tosus jumps in and says, well, what about the antelope, antlers? And the answer is, because that's not roi to be a horn. That's exactly the point. And that's why, in the discussion here, and that's what I wanted to suggest, that's why Rav Yossi, when he was responding to the Tanakhama, he knew the discussion here was about what it's called. He knew the discussion wasn't about what it is. Right? Because again, the statement of the Tanakhama was, all shofars are kosher except for a parah, because it is a Karen, it's not a shofar. But that's obviously not the point. The Re'im is not a shofar. Of a parah, that is a shofar. It's just that it's going to be puzzle for a different reason. It's going to be puzzle for a technical reason, perhaps. Because it's not called a shofar, because of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. But the point is that the cow's horn is roi to be a shofar, as opposed to antlers or other types of animals' horns. Yeah.
We've created three categories, I think.
Yes. I don't know if we call them three categories. What we've said is that there's something that is, by definition, not able to be a shofar, like antlers.
Yeah, okay, that's wrong.
Then we have
Hold on a second.
Then within the world of things that are roi to be shofars, we've got things that are roi and are allowed, and things that are roi and are not allowed for side reasons, which we're going to be bringing up in a second.
That's not quite the way I looked at it. I was looking at it as antlers, which is a separate, pardon the pun, animal. Horns that are hollow, and horns that could be hollow but aren't.
What do you mean could be hollow and aren't?
In other words, and that's how I'm understanding the para, that it's drillable, outable, which I don't think is the case with an antler.
Okay, so I'm not sure about the specific, you know, about where, I would imagine you should be able to drill out if you know.
Otherwise, you're blurring a cow's horn and antler, and I don't see that as...
What do you mean blurring? What do you mean we're blurring them?
Because it seems to me that the...
In other words, Tosfos makes a distinction between things that are right to be a horn and things that are not right to... So right to be a chauffeur and things that are not right to be a chauffeur. So that's
right,
why...
Right, there's antlers and horns.
Good. Now within horns, we're about to see that the chauffeur's horn, the cow's horn, is really totally able to be a chauffeur, and it's going to be possible because it's Nikra Karen.
But I'm having trouble reading the psul of a para as being called... Karen.
Because it's called a Karen. That's the point. It is a shofar. It's a great shofar. Unlike the antler. It could be a great shofar. And the reason it's not, and it is even a shofar, the Ritva says, because it says, call a shofar as a kshen chutz mishel parah. It is a shofar. It's just not a kosher shofar. It's a shofar, just not a kosher shofar. And let's see why. Okay, but a few other things that this explains. The Bali Tosfos also want to know, why does our Mishnah say para and not shur? Why should it say shur? Because the pasuk, b'chor sharo hadar lo v'karnei re'im karno, the pasuk that calls the shofar of a cow a karen and not a shofar, is actually a pasuk about a male cow's horn, not a female cow's horn. It's about a shur's horn, not about a para's horn. So why doesn't the Mishnah say chutz mishel shur? Why does it say chutz mishel para? That's the question of Tosus. Now, it's not a Tosus on our page, but that's okay because the Ramban quotes it b'shem Tosus. And the Ramban, if you'll start noticing as you're learning throughout the years, you'll see that the Ramban, the Ritva, the Rashba, that whole school of Rishonim, did not have in many Masechtas the same Tosus that we have. They quote many, many Tosus that are not printed on our page. They probably had Tosusin of Tosus Rabbeinu Shantz, which are a few generations before our Tosusin, and our Tosusin are based on Tosos Shantz, but Tosos Shantz was much longer, and a lot of them were edited out. And therefore, many times, the Ritva especially, Ritva probably had Tosos Rabbeinu Peretz, which is a different collection of Tosos, so they quote many questions from the Bali Tosfos that are not in our printed Tosfos. So, the Ramban here, the Ramban had a drusha on Rosh Hashanah. Now, if drusha on Rosh Hashanah means that this was like a drusha that he gave in shul, so it was a very, very long drusha, and it wasn't very exciting. It was lots and lots of just like, it was like an eon, like a 5-hour eon shir. So I don't know, they say like the Rav's shuvah drushas and his yardside shirim were hours and hours and hours long, so maybe it was in that style. But the drusha of the Ramban is lots and lots of technical analysis. It's not maybe it means drush in the sense of like drushas chazal as opposed to like a drusha that we have, you know, in Shul. But the drasha of the Ramban, so he quotes from the Bali Tosos this question of why does it say in the Mishnah shel parav and not shel shur. So it could be, and this is what the Ramban suggests, is that since we're talking about a psul that's only based on the name of that it's called a Karen and not called a shofar, so you would think then that maybe the pasuk is only calling the Karen of a shur a Karen and not a shofar. It's only the male version. And therefore the Mishnah specifically wrote para to tell you that it's not only the male version, it's also the female version. That's the Ramban's answer. The reason I'm sharing it with you is not because it's mind-blowing. I'm sharing it with you because it's using the same theme that we're developing, which is that the psul in the Mishnah is purely technical about what it's called in the Torah, but it's not something fundamental about the horn itself. There's also a question the Ramban asks, is how come, what about a Ya'el? Now a Ya'el, we'll talk about what exactly a Ya'el is, but a Ya'el is probably more like what Dr. Ron. But Dr. Ron was talking about when you go like to what's that place near Masada called? Ein Gedi, and you see on the side of the hill there all of those ibexes, or I'm not sure exactly with the those types of animals, those types of deer type, goat deer type animals, an ewe. Okay, so that's a Ya'el. And a Ya'el, how come a Ya'el is not called a shofar or a Karen anywhere in the Torah? So how did it get in? So the Ramban says that you have to realize that once something is a shofar, it's in. Once it's a blowable horn, it's in. The only psul is if the Torah goes out of its way to call it a Karen and not a shofar. And therefore, therefore the shofar of a cow is out because it was called a Karen. And that gets back to what Dr. Zitter was saying, which is that really we have this category called a shofar. Once something is physically a shofar, it's kosher, unless the Torah goes out of its way to call it a Karen and that would oust it. It's something that's really right to be a shofar, and it's out only because the Torah calls it that. Now, the Gemara goes on and tells us that this is not going to be the actual reason or the only reason of why we passel the horn of a shofar, now of a cow. Now, before we go into the first reason that's suggested, which is in kategor nasa sanegor, just one point here in reading the Gemara, because I know for some of you it was hard to read. So, the Gemara says that Rav Yossi said made a good point. So, what are the Rabbanan going to do? The Rabbanan are going to say, call shofar ikru shofar, vikru karen, but a para is called a shofar, Karen ikru, shofar lo ikru. It's ikri. It's called a Karen. It's not called a shofar. It quotes the pasuk in Devarim. So then the Gemara asks Rav Yossi, what's Rav Yossi going to do? Isn't the Tanakhama making a great point that the horn of a cow is called a Karen and it's not called a shofar? So what's Rav Yossi going to do? He has to cook up a pasuk that's going to call the horn of a cow that calls it a shofar. So he finds a pasuk in Tehillim. Now obviously it's not an obvious pasuk because then the Rabbanim would also agree that the horn of a cow is called a shofar. So he finds this pasuk, Vatitav Lashem Mishur Par. And we're being told here that the tefilos of Klal Yisrael are going to be more acceptable or more pleasing to Hashem more than a shur par. So what's a shur par? So Rabbi Yossi learns that a shur par means a shofar. It's not a contraction, but it's a play on words, and Mishur Par really means a shofar. And that the shofar, and this is going to be a theme that we're going to start to develop over the next blot or so, that a shofar is going to, the Chazal see the shofar as a form of tefillah. And when we blow shofar, we know that the shofar oftentimes accompanies tefillah. It's not purely a musical accompaniment to tefillah, but it's actually a form of tefillah. Something that the Rav developed a lot in his shiurim about how the shofar is a form of tefillah. So here we're being told that our tefillos are going to be more acceptable than the sound of the shofar. What's the sound of the shofar? The sound of the shofar is also a form of tefillah, but our tefillos will be more acceptable than the sound of the shofar. So great, now we've understood that the pasuk does call a horn of a cow a shofar. Shur par, Rashi has to, because how do you know it's a shur? It's talking about a cow? Because it's shur par, it's talking about a cow, and a male and female, and a shur par used together, it's in order to teach me that it's a shofar. So what do the Rabbanan do with this pasuk? They can't say it's referring to a shofar. So what are our tefillos going to be better? By the way, this pasuk is very popular now because of that, what's his name, God Elbaz? That God Elbaz song, that is very, very popular now, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech. The beginning of that pasuk is this pasuk. So the Vasita Vashem Yishur Par, what are the Rabbanan going to do with this pasuk? The Rabbanan are going to learn like Rav Masna, my Shor Par, that it's Godol Kippar. Our tefilos will be better than the Shor that was Godol Kippar. What's that referring to? It's referring to the carbon that was brought by Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon, after sinning, brought a Shor as a carbon. Now, a Shor, Pasuk tells us, Rashi quotes it for us, Shor O Kesev O Eiz Ki Yivaleid. Pasuk tells us that you have to wait 7 days till the eighth day in order to bring a carbon. Shor O Kesev O Eiz Ki Yivaleid, when it's born, you have to wait until the eighth day in order to bring it as a carbon. But the Torah calls it a Shor right away when it's born. So a Shor is a term that you can use for a male cow when it's first born. But what about a female cow? What's a female cow called when it's born? An egel. And only until it's the age 3 is it called a par. So the Torah tells us, so even though normally a par is not called a par when it's first born, it's only called a par later in life as opposed to a shor, so we're told here that it's going to be a par shu godol, so that it's a shor which is godol kipar. It was a shor, and yet even though it was just born, it was born full in a par-like way, meaning that it was full-born. What does it mean it was full-born? We know that in Maaseh Bereishis, the animals weren't created as babies. They were created full-born. So Adam HaRishon brought a shor as a carbon. Don't think that it was a baby, newborn shor. It was a full-blown shor. And the point is here that our tfilos are going to be more acceptable than that great carbon brought by Adam HaRishon. For that big sin, our tefillos will be more acceptable than that carbon brought. That's how they understand the pasuk, and therefore they do not have a pasuk in the Torah calling the horn of a cow a shofar. Okay, let's move on now a little bit to Inkat Egor Sanegor. So Rav Chisda introduces, or Ula introduces, that maybe another reason that the horn of a cow is not, and that's what Gemara says at the end, that it's two reasons. Another reason why the horn of a cow is not acceptable to be a shofar is because of the principle of ein kategor nasa sanegor, that that the prosecuting attorney can't also then flip around and become the defending attorney. So the first question we ask when we introduce to a din is, what is the status of this din? Is this a d'oraisa din? Is this a d'rabbanan din? The pashtus in our sugya is that this is a din d'oraisa. The Gemara is bringing this as the tam of the psul of a shofar of a para. The shofar of a para is not just a d'rabbanan that, d'rabbanan, you're not supposed to use it, and then there's a discussion, b'di'evit, is it okay? No, the horn of a cow is pasul mid'oraisa, and sounds like this principle of ein kategor nasa sanegor might even be a concept d'oraisa. In fact, the Gemara here says it's a chad of a od kamar. The primary reason is ein kategor nasa sanegor. The od, because it's called a karen, it's not called a shofar. So the primary reason of the psul is ein kategor nasa sanegor. In addition, Rav Chisda is suggesting that the reason why the Kohen Gadol cannot wear his golden vestments into the lifnai v'lifnim, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is because of this principle of ein kategor nasa sanegor. Now, the Kohen Gadol not wearing the big day zav into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is also a din d'oraisa. It's not a din d'rabbanan. It's a pasuk in the Torah tells us that he's supposed to wear the white clothing, not the golden clothing. So, seemingly, this is a din d'oraisa, this idea of ein kategor nasa sanegor. Now, Rav Asher Weiss, in an article, asks that this position here of Rav Chisda seems to be problematic because we have a machlokas tanoim. Are we darshin and time in dekra? Are we not darshin and time in dekra? Do we try to figure out, and not only we do try to figure it out. The Rambam tells us we should try to figure it out. But do we apply halachos based on a tam of a pasuk? And we do not hold like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. We hold that we're not darish time in dekra. We will not apply halachos. But what does Rav Chisda here say? Rav Chisda says, you know why the Kohen Gadol can't wear the big day kohun, the big day zav into the Kodesh Kedashim? It's because of this idea of ein kategor nasa sanegor. That's the reason for that halacha, and therefore, that's not the problem. That's the reason. The Torah tells us you don't wear the gold clothing. Rav Chisda is now coming and saying, you know what the reason is? Because of ein kategor nasa sanegor, and therefore, the shofar of a para is pasul. So he's applying the reason that he thinks is the reason for the din of Big Day Zav, and he's applying it to now Pasel, the shofar of a para. And that would seemingly be a problem of Darshin and Taima Dekro. So Rav Asher Weiss gives two suggestions. His first suggestion is based on a Tosfos Rosh in Bava Metzia. The Tosfos Rosh in Bava Metzia, in a different context, writes that, and this is a big chiddush, that when, but it's a good sheet to like have in your pocket because you can always try to apply it places when you need it. Tosfos Rosh in Bava Metzia and Daf Tse'adi says that the din of that Ein Darshin and Taima Dekra only applies when the time is not obvious. But when the time is obvious, you're allowed to apply it. And he brings one or two rayas for it over there in Bava Metzia, other cases where we're seemingly Dorish Taima and Dekra because it's so obvious. Now, a statement like that, so obvious, obviously is not going to fly in a base medrash. You need to define what makes something, is there a criteria here? What makes something obvious enough that you're allowed to be Dorish Taima and Dekra? But suffice it to say, that's what the Tosfos HaRosh says in Bava Metzia, and you could technically use that answer. The other answer is that we might just have the chronology here wrong. It could be that there's a Svar D'Oraisa of En Kategor Nasa Sanegor, and that Svara is the driving force behind both halachas. It's not that we saw the halacha of Big Day Kahuna, said En Kategor Nasa Sanegor, and therefore applied it to this principle. It could be that the Svara, this is what Rav Asher Weiss suggests, that the Svara is an independent Svara, right? The Gemara identifies a Svara as perhaps even stronger than a Pasuk, right? Because the Torah, what does the Gemara say in a couple of places? Svara hi lama likra. What do I need a Pasuk for? It's a Svara. So the Pnei Yeshua writes, based on that you see that a Svara is stronger than a Pasuk. If something's a Svara, you don't need a Pasuk. So Rav Asher Weiss suggests, maybe in Kategor Nasa Senegor is such an overwhelming Svara, it's a Svara D'Oraisa. And based on that, we then learn out both of these halachos. But be that as it may, it's an interesting question that he raises. Now, in terms of the Big Day Kahuna, there's a little bit of a question. The Rambam, Baruch Hashem, we had in the yeshiva this year, one of my colleagues, Rabbi Yehuda Turetsky, was giving shiurim for half the year on Big Day Kahuna. So I was able to discuss this with him a little bit, and he was able to point something out to me very nicely. He pointed out to me something very nice in the Rambam. Okay, we are in we are in Sefer Avoda, and we are in Avodas Yom HaKippurim, Perek Beis. Says the Rambam.
Perek
Beis. Yeah, Perek Beis Alachas. Kol Ma'aseh Tzmidah Musafin Shel Yom Zeh, Osan Oso Kohen Gadol Who Lavash For Big Day Zav. When it comes to the avoda on Yom HaKippurim, the regular daily avoda that was done in every day, like the Karban Tamid, so the Kohen Gadol wears Big Day Zav. But the avodos hamiyuchados liyom zeh beBig Day Lavan. But the special Yom Kippur avodos he did in Big Day Lavan. And what are these? Also the Musaf. Yeah, Tzmina and Musafim he would wear the Big Day Zav. And for the Big Day Lavan he would use for all of the special avodos for Yom HaKippurim. And what are they? Avodos hamiyuchados liyom zeh. Who? Parshal shel Kohen Gadol, Shnei Si'irim, Echad Mehem, Si'irim Ishtaleach. Vaktor Saktoras Bekodesh Kedoshim. Kol Elu Bebig Dei Lavan Heinasim. So, the Mefarshim point out that according to Rav Chisda, we only don't wear the Big Day Zav, Lifnai V'Lifnim, because of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. Therefore, what would you think the Kohen should wear when he does the Si'irim Ishtaleach? Si'irim Ishtaleach is not done Lifnai V'Lifnim. Si'irim Ishtaleach is done outside. So why doesn't the Kohen Gadol wear his gold clothing for the Sira Mishtaleach? This is the question the Kesef Mishnah asks here. So what the Mefarshim are medayik from this is that the Rambam did not learn that the reason that the Kohen Gadol wears Big Day Lavan is because of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. That's not the reason. The reason is because the Pasuk is explicit in the Torah. The Pasuk says, Bezos Yavo Aaron El HaKodesh. And it says, lists there, the Big Day Lavan. The Pasuk tells us, it's Gzeiros HaKasuv, that the Kohen Gadol wears his Big Day Lavan. Rav Chisda afterwards came and said, well, you know what's very nice then? We have a very nice principle, Vein Kategor Nasenegor, to explain why he doesn't go Lefnai V'Lefnim with the Big Day Zav. But that's not the reason. The reason the Kohen Gadol wears Big Day Lavan for the Avodas of Yom HaKippurim, not only the ones that are inside, even the Sira Meshtalech, which is outside, is because that's a Gzeiros HaKasuv. Who also says like the Rambam? Rabbi Akiva Eger in Pesachim. In Pesachim, you saw the Rashi in Pesachim. Rashi there is talking about why the Kohen Gadol, about wearing on his Netzach, he wears part of his big day kahuna, the big day zav, he wears on his meitzach. The tzitz he wears on his meitzach. And Rashi there says, why? Why doesn't he wear that bifnim, the Gemara says? So Rashi sticks in, because of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, and he quotes from Perek Shlishi of Rosh Hashanah. Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, what does he say? Anyone saw it? What does Rabbi Kiva Eger say? What did he say? He says, what? Darshin and time of the car? That's not the reason. He says, the Pasuk says, you wear big day lavan. Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor is not the primary reason. The reason is only because the Pasuk tells us that's the primary reason. So we have, first of all, an afkamina that it could be, according to Rashi, that the Kohen Gadol would wear the big day zav for the Sira Mishtaleach. If you learn that the only reason the Kohen Gadol doesn't wear gold, lifnai v'lifnim, is because of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, then any avoda of Yom Kippur that's not bifnim, like the Sira Mishtaleach, you would wear the gold clothing. But if you learn, like the Rambam, that the primary reason is because of the Pasuk, and Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor is just a nice addition of why we don't wear the bifnim, so the Sira Mishtaleach would also wear the white. Now, this has a very nice nafkamina in terms of the Havana of how you look at the Big Day Lavan. See, according to Rashi, the Big Day Lavan don't seem to have so much of a mila to themselves in Yom Kippur. The only reason you're wearing the Big Day Lavan is because you can't wear the gold, so you put on the Big Day Lavan. But according to the Rambam, the Big Day Lavan seem to be special clothing for Yom HaKippurim. And this is almost explicit in a Rambam. This machlokas, perhaps machlokas, Rashi and Rambam, that had a look at the big day lavan, actually might be l'shitasam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, which one is it?
I didn't see that sheet.
I didn't put it there? Mm. Okay. In Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, the Rambam writes, going through here the different clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Big Day Kahuna Shlosha Minim. There are three types of Big Day Kahuna. Big Day Kohen Hedjot, Big Day Zav, or Big Day Lavan. The normal Kohanim have one thing, it's called Big Day Hedjot. The Kohen Gadol has two types of clothing, Big Day Zav and Big Day Lavan. And then the Rambam tells us, what are the Big Day Lavan? Heim Arba Kelim Shemishamish Bem Kohen Gadol B'Yom HaKippurim. These are the four, and then he lists them. They happen to be the four exact same four as the Kohen Hedjot clothing. But for the Rambam, there are actually three types of clothing. There's the Big Day Hedjot, which are the Ksonis, the Mechassayim, the Avnei, the Metznefes. There's the Big Day Zov for the Kohen Gadol, for the Kohen Gadol. And then there's the Big Day Lavan that he wears on Yom HaKippurim, which are the same four as the Big Day Hedjot. You see, for Rashi, it seems, and this is the reason why I say it could be l'shitasam, is because there's a machlokas about what you do with the Kohen Gadol's clothing after Yom HaKippurim. And according to Rav Dosa in the Gemara, there's two different opinions. According to Rav Dosa, the Kohen Gadol's clothing cannot be used for another Yom Kippur afterwards. So what do you do with them? So they're ru'uyin l'kohen hedjot. So Rashi says, you know why they're ru'uyin l'kohen hedjot? Because they are Big Day Hedjot, Rashi says. The Kohen Gadol just doesn't wear the gold inside, so he wears Big Day Hedjot. So when Yom Kippur's done, you can't use them on Yom Kippur, but the Kohen Hedjot can use them on any day. So Rashi learns that the Big Day Lavan on... there's a Peirush in the Rambam that I finally found. Rabbi Turetsky said this himself. He said he saw it in a Sefer someplace, but I didn't have the Sefer with me here. I finally found it. There's a Peirush on the Rambam called the Beis Lechem Yehuda. So he says this pshat also in the Rambam, that the Rambam and Rashi argue about how to look at the Big Day Lavan. For Rashi, the Big Day Lavan are just not Big Days of, so therefore you put on Big Day Hedjot. And for the Rambam, the Big Day Lavan are actually something themselves, which obviously if we think about it, there could be a lot of machshava here about the Kohen Gadol using the Big Day Lavan on Yom Kippur, that a little bit was mentioned last night in the Shir last night. Is the Big Day Lavan Lavan, is that supposed to be some type of like, on Yom Kippur, there's an idea of trying to be like the Malachi Asharis as opposed to Tisha B'Av. That was what we spoke about in the Shir last night, where Tisha B'Av is much more about Avelus as opposed to Yom Kippur, which is much more about trying to be like the, not eating was actually not a good example, but not bathing and not washing yourself was Avelus for Tisha B'Av, but for Yom Kippur, it's because we're going away from physicality. We're trying to be like Malachi Asharis. So on Yom Kippur, the fact that the Kohen Gadol wears white, is that because there's some angelic element here going on? Although it was noted last night, like who said the angels are white? But we'll talk about that another time. The Big Day Lavan are supposed to be angelic and pure and nucky, and that's why the Kohen Gadol, it's the Yom Kippur garb. Or is it's just because you don't want to wear big day zav. So that's an interesting discussion that emerges from this shita here of Rav Chisda of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. Is that really the reason why we're not wearing the big day zav? Okay.
It shouldn't be just what you do with them afterwards. Rashi should require no special creation of the big day lava.
You mean originally, in order to send them towards being right? That would be true. There would be a whole slew of nafkaminas here of that the big day lavan have a whole, another chalos to them. They're not just a pure big day hedgeot. Okay, one last point before we break for today. Not one point, but one last discussion that I want to discuss before we break for today, and that is the flow of the Gemara here in terms of En Kategor Nasa Sanegor. So the Gemara says, En Kategor Nasa Sanegor, that's why we don't wear big day zav. Okay, so the Gemara asks, well then what about the Dam of the Par? The Dam of the Par is used inside, sprinkled inside the Kodesh Kedashim, and shouldn't that conjure up the imagery of the Egel Azav? So the Gemara says, no, it's blood is very, blood of this animal, blood of that animal, it's generic. It doesn't have any significance. Now, I'll obviously point out that obviously God is able to tell the difference between the blood of a par. Obviously, En Kategor Nasa Sanegor here is not something that's God-oriented. It's something having to do with ourselves, that there's a problem for us. We should have a problem going towards someone and asking them for kapara with the same object that we sinned with. Not because, God sees it and he realizes, God realizes that the dam of the par is also coming from a cow. This has something much more to do with our posture than HaKadosh Baruch Hu's. Okay, then the Gemara says, okay, you can't have gold inside the, right, this is one of those classic ironies that I know Rav Tzadok talks a lot about in his Sfarim. According to a lot of Rishonim, the Mishkan was a kapara for what? The sin of the Egel. Okay, so the sin of the Egel was a golden, molten image out of gold. Okay, so let's build a Mishkan. What's going to be the centerpiece of the Mishkan? Two big golden, molten images right in the middle of the Kodesh Kedashim. Right, when you think about the Mishkan as a kapara, you never think about it that the Kruvim are golden, molten images of gold that are sitting there in the middle of the, that we're doing all of our avoda around. So it's an interesting kapara for the Chet HaEgel. You would think that maybe like an empty room where we recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no image would be the more appropriate kapara for the Chet HaEgel. So the Gemara here says, V'ha'ika Aron v'kaporis. You want to stay away from gold inside the Kodesh Kedashim? You walk in, the whole place is filled with gold. The Aron, the kaporis, the Kruvim, it was glistening with gold when you walked into the Kodesh Kedashim. So Gemara says, yeah, Chote Bal Yakriv. And a bunch of you asked me about the word Halom. In Rashi, Halom means po, here. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he at the Sneh Hashem says, Al Tikrav Halom, you can't come here. So that word is, I know Rashi quotes that poetic word here, but Chote Bal Yakriv Kamrinan. What it means is, it doesn't mean you can't have gold inside the Kodesh Kedashim. It means that you can't bring gold forward as part of your approaching HaKadosh Baruch Hu with something of gold. Then the Gemara says, but we approach God with a golden calf and a golden machte. So Gemara says, you're right. Chote Bal Yisnoe Kamrinan. What I meant was, you can't beautify yourself with gold. So then the Gemara asks about the big day zav, and the Gemara answers, no, I'm only talking about bifnim. So the question that we need to ask is, as we introduced new criteria, what happened to the old criteria? Were those thrown out because we don't need those anymore? We have a new criteria or not? So, I think some people read in Rashi that Rashi learned that at the end of the day, there's only one criteria, and that's bifnim. Rashi was talking about the shofar. He says, listen, the shofar is a problem. It's not Bal Yakriv, it's not Bal Yisnoe, but it's bifnim, and bifnim is the issue. But it's hard to have bifnim to be the issue, because then you go back to the problem of, you have plenty of things that are bifnim. We have the Aron, we have the Machteh. So you can't get rid of all of the previous criteria. So there is a Machlokas Rishonim, seemingly, about whether Bal Yakriv was thrown out. But Bal Yisnoe seems to be in. Even though Rashi excludes it, the Turei Evan wants to throw it in, and he starts to say that Rashi's Lav Dafka. It's a little hard to say he's Lav Dafka. I mean, he says things pretty explicitly, but it could be that there's two different tracks here. It could be there's one way to get to En Kategor Nasa Sanegor. That's with the Bal Yakriv, Bal Yisnoe track. And it could be that there's another track, which is Bifnim. Tosfos certainly keeps Bifnim in, as you notice. Tosfos tries to to explain why a shofar is bifnim, and the Torah Evan questions whether that's necessary. We're not going to go into all of the details right now, the Ritva, but I heard a lot of you in Seder talking about it. And as I said, I really see, and I tell the guys this at the beginning of the year always when they come, I don't see my role as the person to teach you everything. I'm trying to be the excuse that's going to be the cause for you doing all the learning, meaning to direct you so that you could do the analysis. When I have something to add, I'll add something. But I was listening during Seder, and there's a very nice Kol Torah here. I heard a lot of people asking the questions. Well, do you need Bal Yisnoya at the end? And if you do, how is the shofar Yisnoya? The Turi Evan had a suggestion. Tosos had a suggestion. The one thing I'd like to just bring up as we go forward for tomorrow is tomorrow we're going to have a very interesting discussion all about Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. Seemingly from our Gemara, and again, I know there's different ways to look at it, but it seems like when you emerge from our Gemara, that something needs to be bifnim. You know, the Gemara has this line that's a little bit hard to understand exactly what he means, that since the sound of the shofar, or since the shofar blast is lezikaron, so it's kibifnim dummy. You know, it's a really great springboard for a drasha, and it's really nice for a musr shmuz. But what exactly does that mean? You know, what's the halacha criteria here? What does this mean that because it's lizikaron, it's kilifnim dummy? So you're going to tell me that the ritva you saw inside, the ritva says that the shofar is supposed to be something that is meratzeh, and it brings ritzway to Hashem, and it like accompanies our tfilos into the Kodesh Kedashim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a very nice idea. The question is, this is like halacha categories here. So what does that mean? When does something get the status of that it's kil lifnim dummy? There's a din by some things that are lifnim, and the sound of the shofar is kil lifnim dummy. And you'll see, people try to, sound is able to penetrate through walls, and therefore it's not bound by specific location, and it's, even if you blow outside the Kodesh Kedashim, it's kilifnim, because you can hear it inside the, you know, there are lots of creative suggestions to try to explain why something is considered kilifnim dummy. You know, the sound reverberates inside the Kodesh Kedashim. But here we have a principle that there's certain things that are so important that they're also going to be susceptible to this psul of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. Tosfos starts asking, what about the Eifod then? What about the Choshen? All very interesting discussions. What we're going to see tomorrow is that there are going to be a number of areas where the principle of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor is applied, even though it doesn't seem to have this criteria fulfilled of Lifnim. And we're going to have to start discussing, as I know we brought up, are there other tracks to get to the psul of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor? I'll give you one example. We're going to look at it inside tomorrow, but I'll give you one example. The Gemara says that a Kohen who has committed a murder is not able to duchen. Now, there's a very interesting discussion in Poskim. Does that mean malicious murder? What if someone gets into a car accident, a Kohen gets into a car accident and kills someone? Is he able to duchen? Is it only malicious murder, or it's any time someone causes the death of somebody else? What about a Kohen who's a doctor and someone dies on the... He has a terminal disease. They're trying to save his life and he doesn't survive and he dies on the operating table. So now the Kohen can't duchen? So these are tshuvas that are brought up. But the Gatzu Gemara says a Kohen who has killed is not able to duchen. Okay, that's the Gemara in Brachos. Now there's a Gemara in Yevamos, and the Gemara in Yevamos says that a Kohen who has murdered, so you take him and he's getting the death penalty, if he's on his way to do the avoda, even if he's on his way to do the avoda, and Tosfos says, even if he's the only Kohen in Klal Yisrael, you don't let him do the avoda, you're mevatel the tamid, and you kill him. That's what the Gemara says. Because the death penalty is doche avoda. And the Gemara is in the middle of a big discussion about what's doche what. So the Gemara says that the death penalty is doche the avoda. So Tosfos says, wait a second, maybe the reason that you take him and you give him the death penalty in the middle of the avoda is because he's not roi to do the avoda. Just like he can't duchen, if you can't duchen, l'chori, he can't do the avoda either. So Tosfos says, no, that can't be, because the din is only if he's me'im mizbechi, but not, the Gemara darshan, not me'al mizbechi. If he's in the middle of the avoda, you don't take him for the death penalty. Only if he's on his way to do the avoda. So he can't not be roi to do the avoda. So then Tosfos says, well, then why can't he duchen? So Tosfos gives two answers. His first answer is, there's a chumrah for duchen, and he starts to go on a whole discussion. His second answer is, because ein kategor nasa sanegor. The hands that killed are going to now bless Klal Yisrael. The avoda he can do. Because the avoda is the avoda. It's not as hand-focused. But duchening is hand-focused. And therefore, the hands that killed Okay, so then this raises the question, what if he kills not with his hands? Okay, that's one question that it raises. Say he kills in other ways. Let's say he uses his foot to kill someone. But the other question, the obvious question is, duchening, is the psul of duchening is because of ein kategor nasa senegor? Duchening's not bifnim. I thought our Gemara says that we only apply ein kategor nasa senegor by bifnim. So what are you going to tell me? Since duchening is lizikaron, it's kibifnim gami. No one says that. We don't have a precedent for that. So this is going to be one example out of a number that we're going to see that the principle of ein kategor nasa senegor is going to be applied in places that are not only bifnim. Even though our Gemara seems to conclude, I say seems to conclude that in order to apply the principle of ein kategor nasa senegor, it's got to be something that's bifnim. So Amir Tzashem, tomorrow we'll address those cases and those issues.